Chapter 21, Popping Egos. Hiei's eyes flew open. Something had woken him. Ah, harsh breathing, slowly softening, as if the owner was coming out of a fright. Someone'd had a nightmare. Not again. Harry's voice floated through the darkness, nowhere near loud enough to wake anyone else in the room. A gentle flapping and some clicks. Harry was shoving his bedclothes and curtains aside, and fumbling for his glasses.
Gotta see Dumbledore. Right now.
What? Dumbledore? Not just a nightmare, then. And today, of all days. Hiei was still a bit lethargic from the equinox. He waited, listening as Harry rummaged in his trunk for something. Then the boy padded across the floor, the door slowly creaking open. A pause, then the door clicked shut. Hiei sat up, pushing his bedclothes and curtains aside. He darted to the door, slipped through it just as carefully and quietly as Harry had, and headed downstairs in the boy's wake. He eased the portrait door open, peering to either side to check that Harry hadn't glanced back. Harry wasn't in view. Odd. Hiei hadn't thought he'd been that far behind the human. He crept out, closed the portrait, and again the fat lady was sleeping. And turned right. Harry was probably heading for the headmaster's office. Hiei wasn't entirely sure where that was, but chances were that it was on a different floor, or a different wing of the castle. That would put Harry's route through the staircase atrium. Reaching the 7th floor landing, Hiei peered carefully over the railing, down into the depths of the atrium. 2 stories below, a single staircase ground slowly to a halt. Hiei's eyes narrowed. He leaned a bit further over the railing, turning his head to the side in order to hear better. Far below, there was the sound of a faint, shuffling step. If Hiei wasn't a demon, and hadn't survived the Makai wilds and cities alone since infancy, he wouldn't have been able to hear it. Checking the current positions of the various staircases, Hiei climbed onto the banister and began flickering in pursuit of the noise, assuming that Harry had cast some sort of invisibility charm on himself. The footsteps led him to a landing on the 2nd floor, down several corridors, then into a long corridor with no cover. Hiei waited behind the corner, listening as carefully as he could, but before Harry could have gotten all the way to the far end, his steps came to an abrupt halt. A soft intake of air. Harry was going to speak.
Grr! Crash!
Hiei clapped his hands over his ears. Peeves' cackling rose over the unmistakable ringing echoes of fallen metal. The trophies, the suits of armor, Hiei didn't care what it was, it hurt! He peered around the corner, just in time to see a gargoyle jump back into place. Eyes narrowing, Hiei darted forwards, skidding silently to a stop before the statue. It didn't move. Obviously, it wasn't activated by a person's presence. So, it had a password, a manual trigger, was keyed to specific people, or any combination of the 3. He might be able to see that in the matrix of power powering the gargoyle. Hiei yanked his headband off just in time to be half-blinded when an intricate net of wards flared into life behind the stone. He clapped a hand over the Jigan and hissed, his own eyes watering. He hated being flash-blinded. The Jigan always maliciously amplified it. Wrapping the Jigan back up again, which would help the damned implant recover more quickly, Hiei turned to simpler methods. He bent close to the statue, and slowly ran his hands along it, feeling for physical triggers. Not that he really expected to find one, considering how dependent these wizards seemed to be on their wands, but that was exactly why a purely non-magical latch would be excellent security here. His eyes fell shut as Hiei focused on what his fingers were telling him. Flat stone, dull edge, chipped edge, more stone. A carved feather slipped. Hiei's eyes popped open. A latch? Carefully, he pried at the loose bit. It clicked faintly out of place. Nothing happened. A dud, then. But it at least proved that someone in the school's history was capable of using muggle tricks. Hiei continued to feel for latches. 3 dummy latches later, Hiei was beginning to lose patience. He was also beginning to wonder if the unknown person responsible for this gargoyle had been entirely sane. It was a fine line between genius and insanity. After all, and using 4 dummy latches, even Enma's vault only had 2. Well, 2 that Kurama had found. But there had been considerably more magical defenses guarding the land, the building, the hallway, and the door, plus live guards. 1 more. If he found 1 more fake latch, he was switching back to the Jigan, whether it had recovered or not. He pulled himself up one-handed, using a wing to get himself within arm's reach of the higher parts of the gargoyle, and brushed his free hand over the curved throat. Jiganshi, would you be so kind as to explain to me why exactly you are molesting a statue at 1 o'clock in the morning? Hiei froze, mortified. Snape continued, and Jiganshi, that's not a request. Hiei just glared. Snape glared back. Finally, the professor broke the stalemate. 5 points for molesting the statue, 20 points for being out after curfew, and 20 points for disobeying a professor. Come along, Mr. Jiganshi. I think I will escort you back to your dormitory, just so you don't get lost on the way. Hiei growled as he followed. So it was pretty much exactly the same, just on a moor instead of a swamp, Professor. I see, Dumbledore murmured. And how are you feeling now, Harry? Harry's mouth quirked ruefully. In a word, terrible. His scar was burning, his head was pounding, his muscles ached, and he'd managed to overlook all of that until he'd sat down in the office. Just like he'd overlooked how tired and groggy he was from waking up in the middle of the night until now. The adrenaline must be wearing off. Dumbledore was nodding sagely. I thought as much. Come, I'll walk you back to Gryffindor. During breakfast, Professor McGonagall received an owl. As she read her letter, a fleeting expression of worry passed over her face, piquing Kurama's curiosity. She leaned over, murmured something to Genkai, and finished her breakfast. Then the 2 teachers left. Kurama casually stood and left as well. He found the 2 slightly down the hall, and slid into a nook just within earshot. They aren't Ouro trainees, Genkai. They're children. They aren't eager to suffer for their education, particularly not on weekends. Weekend lions are very nearly sacred to them, and they'll do just about anything to avoid being disturbed. Genkai folded her arms and glared upwards. They have Saturdays off. Coddling them just makes them lose respect for you. McGonagall glared right back down. Perhaps, Professor Genkai, that is how it is done in Japan. But you have accepted a teaching position in England, in case you haven't noticed. These students did not come here under the impression that they would be forced into Eastern-style schooling on the whim of an eccentric professor, who, if the recent pattern holds true, will not even be returning next year. Genkai sputtered and finally said, What I do with Yusuke is my business and his. He agreed to the training. That is well and good, McGonagall sniffed. But you will wake him and take him out for training quietly. You will not wake the other students in his dormitory, nor will you engage in further random destruction of school property. Mr. Urameshi may have agreed to your training, but I assure you that Mr. Potter, Mr. Weasley, Mr. Thomas, Mr. Longbottom, and Mr. Finnegan have not. Nor have I seen Mr. Jiganshi or Mr. Kuwabara joining you. Quite frankly, Professor, there is only 1 of Mr. Urameshi, and there are 7 of his roommates. I was asked here to train these children in defending themselves, Genkai reasoned. Of course you were, McGonagall replied smoothly. And you did it so well that 5 of them, including Harry Potter, begged one of our alumni to send them enchanted earplugs to sleep in. Genkai rocked back on her heels, eyes wide with shock. Kurama was stunned as well. Having Harry Potter and all his roommates unable to hear if someone entered their room during the night was a dangerous liability. McGonagall continued more quietly. I am given to understand that it took Mr. Kuwabara physically shaking them to wake them up, since they couldn't hear a bloody thing. Genkai opened her mouth. McGonagall raised a hand and forestalled her. My point, Professor Genkai, she said calmly, is that if I hear of you disturbing the sleep of any of those children for anything less than a full-scale emergency, I will transfigure you into a plaid tea cozy, and then I will inform the portrait of the fat lady that you are not to be let into Gryffindor Tower, no matter what teacher's password you give. I hope we understand each other. Perfectly, Professor. Excellent, Professor. McGonagall turned and swept away. A moment passed before Genkai turned her head. I know you're there, Kurama. I suppose you're quite amused. Well, yes. Why lie? It wasn't every day he got to see someone take Genkai down a peg. Don't be. Genkai's eyes gleamed with a hint of amusement. This is a bit of culture clash. It's going to be just as much your problem soon enough. Kurama's smile didn't fade. Only if I hadn't taken their sensibilities into account when I began my own planning. Genkai snorted and stalked off, and Kurama headed outside. This is a good day. A cool presence near his wards woke Hiei late. He sat up, yawning, and shoved the curtain aside. Yukina sat on a chair next to his bed, eyes downcast, and looked as if she'd been waiting patiently for a while. He raised an eyebrow in question.
Good morning, Oni-san,
Yukina said softly, her gaze flicking up to him for just a second. What's wrong? He asked.
You were ill yesterday, and I didn't...
She shrank in a bit on herself.
I'm so sorry.
Hiei frowned. What the hell do you have to be sorry for?
I didn't...
He had to strain to hear her next words.
Even notice.
I wasn't expecting you to, Hiei grumbled. It hurt to hear, but it wasn't as if she could have done anything but worry. You weren't yourself. She wouldn't, couldn't have been unaffected.
Well, no. I was terribly rude yesterday. To everyone.
Hiei blinked. He'd managed to distract her from apologizing, but... rude? Since when was Yukina, of all people, rude?
I skipped all the courtesies. I scheduled all my tutoring without so much as asking anyone to sit, much less have tea.
Oh, that sort of rude. Botan's mannerisms. Hiei huffed with some amusement. These gaijin wouldn't have noticed, he told her. To the point is their way.
But Mr. Malfoy did. He was terribly upset.
Forget Malfoy.
But
he's not worth it. Yukina sighed.
He doesn't want me to tutor him at all. And I think he might have been practicing on his own.
Nothing you can do about it, Hiei said gruffly, shoving the blankets back. He swung his legs out of the bed, then froze, feeling Yukina's eyes on him. What?
Could you...
Hiei raised an eyebrow, waiting. If she wanted him to keep an eye on Malfoy, he'd direct her to Kurama.
Could you tell me what you would do?
She asked. Oh. I'd let him sink or swim, he said flatly. Yukina's eyes turned downwards again, shamefully. But I'd offer again, after he got into trouble trying to do it on his own, he offered, lying. She glanced back up, visibly more relieved. A soft rustle caught Hiei's attention. He stiffened, then spun towards the source. Flipping curtains aside, sunshine streaming onto the bed, and Harry flinched away violently, rolling over with a low moan and dragging a pillow over his face. You were listening? Hiei growled.
Not so loud.
Hiei blinked. As Yukina stepped up to peer around his shoulder, he asked more quietly, "Were you listening?"
"Wasn't..."
Harry pushed himself half upright, scrambling for his glasses on the nightstand.
"Soulspec," Harry muttered.
As he dragged them onto his face, the lenses went dark.
"I was having a lion. Ow."
"Harry-san, are you feeling all right?" Yukina asked.
"Sure, I'm fine."
A pause. "Thanks for asking." Yukina smiled.
"I understand that you occasionally become ill because of your dreams."
Harry tensed, and Yukina hurried to reassure him.
"Oh, don't worry. This isn't common knowledge. I was told because I know certain healing charms not available in Western medicine."
She held a hand out.
"With your permission?"
Harry eyed her warily from behind his darkened lenses.
"Will it hurt?"
"No."
Harry flopped back onto the bed.
"Whatever then."
Hiei stepped aside, letting Yukina in. As Yukina gently took Harry's glasses and set them aside, Hiei fetched her chair. She sat, her hand over Harry's forehead. A pale blue diffuse light surrounded the boy for a few seconds, then receded. Harry had relaxed completely, and sighed a quiet,
"Thank you,"
before settling into sleep. Several hours later. "Dear Mum, I'm the new keeper for the team. I was hoping, but kind of not hoping to. A couple of people think it's because Harry and the twins were most of the team, but they all insist it's not that. They would have picked Ginny too, if it was that, right? School's going well. Professor Genkai made us run a big hexing drill last week. We had to work in little teams with Slytherins. Yuck. But I got in a few good shots. The best, and worst, part is that Malfoy can't blame Harry for any of the hexes that got him. They were on the same team. Harry got sick again last night. Same thing as it was over the summer. Madame Pomfrey's ordered bed rest for the day, but he managed to get out of staying in the infirmary because Jaganchi's sister wanted to practice her new healing charm. He's almost better now, and starting to whine about losing at chess. You know him. Love, Ron." Harry took up his quill and dipped it in the ink. "P.S. Thank you for the brownies. Don't believe Ron. I'm all better. He's just mad that I didn't wake him up when it happened. And I'm not whining. Harry."